welcome to Way Too Seriously, the podcast where we talk about kids' movies and take them way too seriously. I'm Paul Moffat.
I'm Jan Moffat.
And this week we watched and we'll be talking about Megamind. So, cards up front, Jan didn't really want to do a podcast about this one, so I'm forcing her. And I'll start out with a recap of this movie. Megamind is a 2010 movie about, it's essentially if Lex Luthor was the good guy. So the plot of Megamind and Metro Man are both aliens sent to Earth very much like Superman from planets nearby each other. Metro Man lands in the lap of luxury and is raised with many advantages, and Megamind lands in a prison for the criminally gifted. Metro Man grows to be a hero, Megamind grows to be a villain, and the movie really starts as Metro Man decides that he's had enough of it. Well, actually, no, we don't know this. The movie really starts as Megamind...
Spoilers!
Megamind successfully manages to kill Metro Man, and then has to cope with the fact that he doesn't have a rival anymore, and it turns out that Metro Man didn't really die. He was just tired of being a hero, and he retires. But without a hero to fight, Megamind becomes a superhero himself instead to fight a greater villain who comes up. That's essentially the plot of this movie. I've gone more into detail than we usually do, but that's what happened in this movie.
There's a lot that happens. I think that's part of the problem with it. I don't know if that's a problem, but like, the plot is a little convoluted, and like, Metro Man. I always want to call him Mega Man because that's the name of the game. He kills Metro Man. It turns out he doesn't, but, and then he is evil for a while, and then he makes this other hero to be a hero. He helps create him, and honestly, I fell asleep during part of the montage because I was a little tired. And like, and the whole time there's this woman, Roxy?
Yeah,
played by Tina Fey. It was just there to be a love interest and like, and also to have some agency. So like, yeah, it's just, I don't know, it just feels like it takes a lot of twists and turns and like, oh, there's a twist. Not that it's a horrible movie. I'll say what I said before, which is, I felt like watching this, it doesn't do anything that Despicable Me didn't already do. They came out in the same year, which is one of those, you know, things that happens in movies, blah, blah, blah. But Despicable Me does it so much better. And there's also shades of Mystery Men, which is like, you know, 10 years earlier.
And also does it better.
Because Mystery Men, despite being kind of a bad movie, is a movie that I love. And so I'd much rather talk about that than this. Like, it just...
And there's also some aspects of The Incredibles.
Yes, that's what I was thinking
of. Which also does it better.
Yeah.
That the eventual villain is in a few ways reminiscent of Syndrome. And Megamind himself is in some ways reminiscent of Syndrome because he wants to create... It's a little flipped, but he wants to create a hero that he can fight so that he can be the villain. Whereas Syndrome wants to create a villain that he can fight so he can be the hero. But it's similar.
This must be after Incredibles came out, I assume.
I assume so, but I'm certainly not going to look it up.
No, for sure that it is.
So, I mean, we were talking, you can probably immediately tell I'm a little warmer on this movie than Jan is, though I'm not, you know.
I fell asleep.
I'm not out here to say that Megamind is the greatest movie ever. Our kids enjoyed it well enough. I mean, they weren't like writing home about it or anything, but they enjoyed it well enough.
Mm-hmm.
Jan's big, your big criticism of it, I think what you just summed up, that you didn't think it was a bad movie, you just thought everything in it has been done better by someone else.
Yeah.
The other reason Jan didn't want to do a podcast about this one is that she just thought there wasn't enough to say about it. I think we can find some things to say about this
movie. And to take way too seriously.
So, I mean, we'll maybe get out of the way a few little things. Like, I think... Actually, the acting was pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Will Ferrell's great. Tina Fey's great. Who else? Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill.
And David Cross as Minion was really funny.
Yes. I kept trying to figure out who that was, because I always have to know who the voices are. And I had to, and I was knew that I recognized the voice so much, and then finally I figured out that it was David Cross.
I thought he was great. So, I mean, the acting was good. The animation was DreamWorks, which is always, you know, serviceable. One of the things I said about it was that DreamWorks' house style is always the same. You compare it to the a studio you can't help but compare DreamWorks to, which is Pixar, and think about how every Pixar movie has its own distinctive aesthetic, whereas DreamWorks movies all have the same aesthetic. And that's, it's not necessarily an enormous problem. The animation wasn't bad, but it also wasn't anything to write home about. We watched another movie we watched recently that was also not great, but Hotel Transylvania, much better animation than in terms of...
Yeah, but this is more recent.
It's more recent. Well, but just in terms of character design and aesthetic and having a real, like, the way that it... Not the technological aspects of animation, but just, like, the way the characters looked and how it was more interesting to look at.
Yeah.
Than Megamind. But to get that out of the way, I think there were some things that they did well.
They did, yeah. It was funny. I mean, like, definitely had a lot of funny moments, a lot of, like, as an adult, you see the humor in, like, the villain and the references. Not overt references, but subtle references to Superman.
A lot of references to Superman. So, let's take some things way too seriously.
Okay.
I think the first thing that we can really take way too seriously is gender in this movie.
Oh, absolutely.
Gender and sexuality, but specifically gender.
Yeah.
And where would you like... There's a few different ways we can come into that discussion. Where would you like to start talking about gender in this movie?
You just got to talk about Roxy is the love interest for everyone, for three different guys, four.
Before the movie...
Don't interrupt me. She's the love interest for Megamind, for Metro Man, and for Titan, which is also her cameraman. She's a reporter. And she kind of is the love interest for Bernard, who turns out to be Mega Man, but he's there
functionally, he's a separate character for part of the movie anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so she's just like this.
Are you crazy?
I suppose I'm a little crazy. How about you?
Who are you, really?
Roxanne?
Yes?
Say I wasn't so normal. Let's say I was bald and had the complexion of a popular primary color. As a random, non-specific example, would you still enjoy my company?
Of course. You don't judge a book by its cover or a person from the outside. Megamind, I don't even know if you're listening, but if you are, you can't give up. The Megamind I knew would never have run from a fight, even when he knew he had absolutely no chance of winning. It was your best quality. You need to be that guy right now. The city needs you. I need you. Okay. Metro Man and I were never a couple.
But I thought you two were...
Everybody did. It's just...
Object for everyone to be in love with because she's the only woman in the movie.
I was going
to
say, that is what you get when you have only one female character in the movie and you're also very heteronormative, so everything has to be motivated by romantic plots and subplots and tension.
Mm-hmm.
Every male character, no, but not really true, every male character, but both Megamind and Titan are for much of the movie motivated by romantic hopes and or rejection.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have a love interest, but if you only have one female character and your male character's love interest have to be female, then it has to be the same person.
Exactly. And she does have agency. She does make choices and try to save the world herself, sort of. they kind of step up to that and then they back off from it.
Yeah.
I felt like they could have gone further with that. But they do, yeah, she isn't a helpless damsel, but she's damsel a lot of times.
She is. And I mean, what you were saying about her agency is something that happens a lot in movies, where they clearly want not to be sexist, but they have actually considered not being sexist.
Yes.
So they want to give the female character, you know, agency and power and, you know, you make her tough and kick ass and, you make her be the most talented witch of her age. You make her be the, and yet she's not the hero of the book.
No.
Or the movie.
Yeah.
Right? And it comes up again, like, why wasn't Ant-Man about the Wasp if she's better than Ant-Man? Why isn't Hermione the main character of Harry Potter? Why isn't, if Roxy is capable of being the hero, why isn't she the hero?
I mean, I don't think they ever show her as being necessarily capable of the hero, but they do show her a lot of the time as being like, we need a hero, we need this, we need that, and it doesn't occur to her that she could do it.
No.
When clearly she could.
Yeah.
When they've shown that she has power and intelligence and whatnot, basically it's just annoying. It annoyed me, and it made me dislike this movie because of it, because it's like just the ridiculousness of this one single female character.
Yeah. I think, like, without exaggerating, like, I can't think of another female character who has a line.
No, I don't think so. There's not a single other. I mean, there's not a lot of characters. There's like background people, kind of, and then there's the.
The five that we've already spoken about.
Yeah, and that's it. But I guess her mother. The mother of the two, of Megamind says.
Megamind's mother has a line. And Metroman's mother has a line when she lands, when he lands in her mansion.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
That's it.
And one of the things that I think, like, this is why I think that there is a lot to talk about in this movie.
Can I just say something that I realized right now about the sexistness of this movie is even at the very beginning, and maybe you didn't even see this part, when Metro Man gets dropped off in, like, this rich, fancy house, the mom, the, like, wife in the family, it's like he's, like, under the Christmas tree, and she opens it up, and she's like, yay, a baby! And the dad is just like, holding his newspaper, and he's like, all right, dear.
A baby! How awful!
Oh, yes, I saw it and thought of you. Luckily, I found a...
And it's very, like, 1950s. I mean, maybe it is supposed to be the 1950s, but, like, it's very 1950s, like, oh, yay, you got me a baby! And the dad, like, literally is, like, behind his newspaper, cannot see, and it's just like, all right, dear, you're the woman who I just ignore.
I mean, if we, again, take that way too seriously, the image of the man who, as you said, literally cannot see his wife and his partner. He is literally blind to the humanity of the people around him.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? But they don't in this movie. I did see that part, but they don't. I stepped away to make... to serve pizza to our family at early moments in this movie. Would we want to say that there's any attempt in this movie? Like, are they criticizing that?
Maybe it's more a joke. I think it's all for the joke.
Yeah.
And maybe it's a bit like it's critical in terms of like, this is their childhood. And so this is a long time, like a long time ago, sort of. You can't see that I'm doing air quotes in it. Audio.
I'll make a sound every time you do a quote.
That I'm doing. Now I've lost my train of thought.
Completely. It's a long time ago.
And so, like, it can be like, oh, it's the 50s or whatever when they were all sexist. And so, current time is less that. But it still has it. It's still there in the movie. It's still something that my kids saw was this father ignoring his child and ignoring his wife. That's what I always think about when we take this way too seriously is the straight up text of it, my kid is seeing that on the screen. They're seeing that betrayal.
And this is a thing that we'll come back to, I'm sure it comes up in a lot of movies, is that kids' movies specifically, I think, don't get as much from me and you, don't get as much leeway to be satirically parodying and critiquing something, because children are exposed to these tropes, and even if you're reproducing them to criticize them, you're reproducing them for children who weren't aware of them until you reproduced them.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
So you have a father who doesn't care about his wife and thinks of his, and a family who think of a child as a possession, and a father who thinks of his child and his wife both as... treats them as, you know, non-people, as invisible to him. He's literally blind to them because of his emphasis on the new specifically. I'm like, again, that trope exists because it's the idea of men's sphere is the world, women's sphere is the home. So you're in the home, the man has the newspaper, he literally can't see the home because instead he's focusing on the world outside, which is where his attention belongs.
Right.
You know, according to that worldview. I was going to talk about, again, in terms of reproducing tropes critically, one of the things that this movie, like the gender politics of this movie, there's a lot to talk about, because another of the things that happened in this movie, the villain, who's Hal and becomes Titan, played by Jonah Hill, he's very textually... I mean, he's a type that you would recognize, but he's very textually misogynist, entitled. He's textually the nice guy misogynist, right? He thinks that because he barely passes the level of decency in his treatment of a female colleague, that he has therefore earned her love and romantic affection.
Absolutely.
And it stays very subtext, but, you know, he's a... critical portrayal of this type of man who exists in real life of like, I held the door open for you, therefore you owe me sex, right? And so the fact that they have him as, you know, the villain, and they make that very explicit that this is villainous behavior, does the movie get any points for that?
I think it does get a few points for that. It does really show that.
Because
That she doesn't fall all over him for acting like a hero. She's terrified of him for acting like a hero. I mean, he acts like a hero in a bad way, but she doesn't, that it doesn't show like, oh, it was this hero thing that she was attracted to. No, she's attracted to a person. And this guy is ridiculously, you owe me. How could you not be with me after all this?
Right.
And she even says what I thought was so interesting, which I think is a really good thing, is she says he's the last person you want to give powers to. So she recognized before he gets
powers and starts acting explicitly villainous.
Exactly. Before he becomes this, like, gets all these powers and everything, she recognizes that he's not a good guy. She knows that she doesn't want to be with him.
It's and not that's just important that for the movie. That's important for the movie because we need to recognize the movie is actually textually saying that it is, he believes that she is not with him because he's like a schlub and, you know, not just super powerful, buff, charismatic guy.
Yeah.
But the text of the movie makes it clear that she doesn't like or respect him because he is, morally deficient, right? Because if he's the last person that you should give powers to, she's recognizing before he has abused those powers, she's recognizing that he is a person who will abuse those powers.
Yeah, exactly. That is a good point. And that is definitely points in this movie's favor for the gender politics.
And against the movie, he's not the only one who talks about her as an object, as a possession, as a reward for heroism.
Yes.
Very clearly, like, a lot of the movie revolves around, a lot of the back half of the movie revolves around Megamind saying, you know, that he's the bad guy and the bad guy doesn't get the girl.
Yeah.
And that's such a commonly repeated trope that you almost don't notice it unless you're taking things seriously. But what's the problem with that kind of language?
Exactly. Like, he gets to possess her either he does or he doesn't. Well, either way, he never does because she's not a possession.
Yeah.
And that is, again, our kids are hearing that. Our kids are hearing get the girl as a phrase. And that if they internalize that again and again, they're going to think like, oh, I'm someone to be gotten. I'm not my own person. I'm there to be responsive to
a male. To be one or not one, to be like, yeah.
Yeah.
That takes away a lot of the, like, they give her agency, but they don't give her agency.
Yeah.
Because in the end, she is a prize to be gotten. Yeah. And he does get the girl, and that's how you know that he wins at the end. That's how you know the sign that he has successfully become a hero.
Well, that's one of the things, statue of him.
One of his prizes
yeah.
is her.
Is her, absolutely.
Anything else in terms of the gender politics?
I want to touch briefly on race, only to say that I had my little notepad next to me, as I am now with movies, and tick for, like, do I notice any person of color? I noticed literally one person in a crowd in this movie. There was no one.
Yeah.
It was all white. I mean, he was blue. Played by a white actor. So, like, that doesn't really count. Yeah, that was unbelievable. But, like, at one point, the Metro Man at the very beginning juggles three babies. One of them is black. He throws it to his mom. That is it. And I was like, that's, yeah. Wow.
In race terms, representation, this movie is even worse than gender terms.
Yes, absolutely. There's just zero. It's in terms of, yeah, in terms of diversity, in terms of seeing yourself on the screen. Zero.
Yeah. Everyone in this movie is white.
Yeah.
Unless they're blue.
Yeah.
And if they're blue, they're played by a white person with the mannerisms of a white person.
Yeah.
Or a fish, also played by a white person with the mannerisms of
yes,
a white person.
That is also true.
You know, coded white.
That, can we talk about the fish? Let's talk about the fish. Like, his name is Minion.
Mm-hmm.
He's given at the beginning to him as a baby when they're sending him off the planet. As, like, a pet, I guess. But, like, does he have a mind of his own? I kept thinking, like, what is his motivation? Why on earth, like, he's just, like, he's a minion, so he hangs out with... And, like, it's weird because, like, now the term minion has specific connotations.
And we should say, by the way, you said about, you know, Despicable Me... Like, this movie came out the same year as Despicable Me and has the same plot as Despicable Me and also has a minion.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bananas.
Anyway, I interrupted.
Yeah, it's just, I don't understand how movies just do that all the time. All the time. Do they copy off each other? Yes, I guess. I don't know how Hollywood works. Anyway, what, just in terms of story, what is his deal? Does he have any kind of... desires of his own? Only desire seems to be to serve.
I mean, there was a plot point that he was insulted, that Megamind insulted him and he went away, and then Megamind wasn't able to succeed until he came back and he was in disguise as the prison warden and he didn't help Megamind until Megamind apologized specifically for mistreating him.
Yes.
So he has a little bit of agency there, but that was going to bring me to my other idea. Thing to talk about in this movie, which is there's some class issues going on in this movie. Mm. And Minion is one of them, right? The idea that there is a category of person who exists to serve another category of person.
Yes.
Right? He's his, you know, and we see this in movies all the time, the henchman, the minion, the whatever, but the fact that it's from birth, the fact yeah. that it's, you know, his parents are coded upper class, and then they have a servant, an indentured servant that they send to take care of their son, who remains an indentured servant throughout the movie.
Does he take care of him?
Presumably early in his life, he does. Like, he says something about, like, my reason is to take care of you, and then he says, I don't need you anymore.
Because they seem like they're the same age. Like, it wasn't like an Alfred and Batman situation. No. It was like they're the same age, but somehow one of them is a servant. Yeah, you're right. It's like a class thing.
And then speaking of the class thing, then, the very beginning of the movie, where the two land.
Yes.
I feel like there's something there, right?
Lands in a...
Megamind lands in a prison for the criminally gifted.
Yeah.
And Metroman lands in a mansion.
Yeah.
Metroman, who landed in a mansion, grows up to become a hero. And Megamind, who is born in a prison, grows up to become a villain.
Yeah.
So what is this movie saying about class, then?
It is saying what's... Why are you asking me questions?
So we can have a conversation.
Yeah. I mean, it is saying, like, that where you start out, if you're not given the same opportunities, you can end up a certain way. But it also, like, does, you know... I mean, it's in some ways, it's stupid that prison keeps the baby and raises him in the prison, like, what?
Yes.
But because he looks like, because he's blue. But it is true, and then they end up going to school together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same school. Mm-hmm. So they have the same opportunities in that way, but because their home life is different,
yeah,
they go different ways.
And at the beginning of the movie, really, I think, is pretty... I mean, frankly, not very subtle about it, making a, you know, claim that your upbringing and the opportunities that are provided to you controls what happens to you. And the movie talks a lot about, like, one of the themes is destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the movie, you know, makes the argument that destiny is a matter of the opportunities that are available to you by virtue of your upbringing.
Mm-hmm. He also, I'm just thinking now that he, as we should really be calling it, has privilege, has a lot Metro Man has a lot of privilege, and even the privilege to fake his own death and retire.
Mm-hmm.
That is a privilege he has, that he can just retire like that, that he can decide, meh, I'm not going to help people anymore.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't realize how much that would affect those who are... in a lower class or whatever.
This is the thing that, I was thinking as I was watching it, and I was watching Brad Pitt as that voice and thinking, like, cast Brad Pitt as a person who is genetically privileged and treated deferentially because of things that aren't really a virtue. I thought that was interesting. But, we talked before we were recording about the way that the movie, one of the things I think the movie does well, or one of the choices I think that's an interesting choice, is not to make Metro Man the villain, right?
Mm.
So more by the numbers, I think of Dr. Horrible Captain Hammer.
The hero is really the villain.
The hero is really the villain, the villain's really the hero. So if you're going to make the villain into the hero, the by-the-numbers thing to do is to make the hero into the villain. It turns out Metro Man was always a villain, and a Mega Man and Mega Mind has to become heroic to overcome Metro Man. I think there's something interesting about choosing not to do that. But at the same time, they kind of can't decide whether they're going to do that or not. There's some hints early in the movie, like when their rockets are shooting towards Earth and Metro Man's rocket bumps Megamind's rocket, and like he sticks out his tongue, and the privilege throughout is really lampshaded.
Mm-hmm.
And what you mentioned earlier about him juggling babies, he's very like cavalier about the people that he cares. There's a little bit again of Dr. Horrible, of like, you know, I sure am great. He's like the Captain Hammer kind of don't you love me character for a while at the beginning. And then they back away from that, but they don't. And then the other thing is he fakes his death to retire, and Roxy and Megamind are both horrified that he would just retire and step away from helping people.
Yeah.
But then the movie kind of backs away from that again.
It just drops him entirely.
It drops him entirely, and it doesn't. We're not really invited to share their horror, to say, like, oh, it turns out he is a villain. Because if you take it seriously, if you think about it a little bit, they try to end the movie by being like, he was a good guy, he just was retiring. But we can say that you know, with great power comes great responsibility, that he has the power to help people and chooses not to. Actually, they don't subvert that. They don't decide that the hero isn't the villain.
Yeah.
He is the villain.
He is.
Right?
Yeah.
By virtue of not helping
really,
when he can help.
I wonder whether there was, like, whether there was an earlier version of the script where he straight up, he became Titan. There isn't a Titan.
Yeah.
Where he does become the bad guy, because it's true, the first half of the movie seems to be setting that up, and then they just switch gears, and it's like there's two halves kind of coming together. So I wonder if there was like different writers decided to do different things, they changed the script, but certain elements of that previous script remain.
Yeah, I think maybe. And all of that, though, to come back to again what you were saying about privilege, that he, if we kind of take a step back and recognize that, you know, there's two steps of how this movie goes, that you think he's going to become the villain, and oh, he isn't the villain. Oh, wait, take a step further back. Actually, he is the villain.
Mm.
And from this vantage point of recognize him as actually villainous, someone who has the power to help and doesn't, and then take into that again all the privilege that he has in every kind of possible way, genetic, but also financial, but also in terms of whatever, any kind of privilege you can think of.
Yeah.
Is there then an aspect of this movie that is directly, deliberately or not, directly commenting on what makes him villainous is the fact that he has privilege and doesn't use it to help.
Hmm.
Even when he was using it to help, he wasn't using it to help.
Yeah. I don't know if it's consciously doing that, but you're right. If you look for that, if you notice that it is there,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure it's consciously doing it. I don't think that it was smart enough to do that.
No. And
that doesn't really matter, though. That's
no.
Death of the author.
We've come back again to, though, in the aggregate, I think this movie is a movie that tries to do some interesting things and doesn't do any of them as well as other movies have.
Mm.
So there's things going on that are interesting in this movie.
Yeah.
And it suffers a lot by coming out in the same year as Despicable Me. Which is just a better movie.
Yeah, just everything about
every aspect of Despicable Me is better than Megamind. There's no aspect of Megamind that is better than Despicable Me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, unfortunately, and that doesn't mean Megamind is bad, but it just, no part of it is better. Even Will Ferrell is great, but Steve Carell was better.
Yeah, it's true.
So, do you want to, put this on the strange magic
stupid rating system?
To turn around a scale?
Our
stupid rating system. Where do you place this movie as a whole?
I don't know. Not very high.
4.5 strange magics?
4.5, I don't know the rating system. I don't understand the rating system! But, like, not halfway.
Yeah.
But, like, it's not like it's a terrible movie. It's not like I wouldn't watch it again, even. But I would choose so many other movies that are a lot like it over it.
Yeah.
And maybe we should watch Despicable Me soon. Because maybe I'd like to really see what is better about Despicable Me.
Yeah.
Probably the three girls, because they're
great
and awesome.
Yeah, they definitely. Well, yeah.
How do you rate it?
I would also, I think I would put it not halfway, but I think I like it more than you do and would watch it more than you would.
Maybe we need a halfway mark on this reading system.
Yeah, what is halfway? Hoodwinked?
No!
Hoodwinked is quarter way. Hoodwinked
is terrible! That was worse! That was really bad!
I enjoyed Hoodwinked in some ways. No, but Megamind is way better than Hoodwinked.
The other thing is, now that we're actually going to podcast about these movies that we watch on Friday nights, I sometimes fall asleep.
It's true.
I've had a long day at work. We're sitting there. We have a bunch of pizza. And, like, sometimes I just nod off for a little bit. And I try not to. But sometimes I do.
I'll tell you what happened.
That isn't really... I should watch it myself to know what happened.
Do you need a halfway point? What's halfway between Strange Magic?
Maybe this movie.
Maybe Megamind is the halfway. Megamind
is the halfway point.
Because, yeah, it's not aggressive. Like, there's nothing bad about Megamind. Yeah. Well, there are bad things about Megamind. But in terms of the execute, in terms of, like, there are things that are, like, the only one female character and no people of color is bad.
Mm.
But in terms of, like, how they do their job at making a film and putting a story together and acting it out and animating it for us.
Yeah.
It's all very competently done. Okay, let's call Megamind the halfway point.
All right.
In which case, I'm going to put it, what we've said in the past, Hotel Transylvania is higher than halfway then.
Yeah. Slightly higher.
Yeah. And what else have we talked about?
Oh, we talked about Lego Batman.
Batman. That's way up there. Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us. That's a wrap for Way Too Seriously. I've been Paul Moffat.
I've been Jan Moffat.
And you can find us on Twitter at WTSCast. And from there, you can find us personally by using your excellent detective skills. You can email us at waytooseriouslycast@gmail.com.
You can also support us more directly on Patreon, patreon.com/clockworkscast. If you like us, give a rating or review on iTunes so other people can find us too.
We don't have an outro.